If you like playing in the field of possibilities and getting your information from those who really know, Conversation at the Cutting Edge is your kind of program. Host Sandy Sedgebeer speaks with teachers, speakers, scientists, and authors that are shifting perceptions about who we are and what we're capable of. Get ready to expand your awareness and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. Here's Sandy.
Hello, and welcome to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm your host, Sandy Sedgebeer. And tonight, we're going to be talking about a topic that has consumed and frustrated women, and men too, since the beginning of time. So ladies, if you've ever been party to a conversation that included those immortal words, "Oh, why can't men be more like us?" stay tuned, because tonight, we're going to get a little closer to the answer. And men, don't hang up, because this is the conversation that you've been waiting to hear too. My guest is awakening coach, writer and speaker, Arjuna Ada, whose best-selling books include The Translucent Revolution, Better Than Sex, Ecstatic Art of Awakening, and the forthcoming Conscious Men that he's co-authoring with Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus author John Gray. Arjuna, welcome back to the show.
Again, I've been looking forward.
Good. I have too. And what a title, Conscious Men. And you say it's all about the upgrade to masculinity that we're all celebrating today. I have to ask you, why do men need an upgrade to their masculinity?
Well, you know, Sandy, women really claimed a new role. Women have been claiming a new role in society for the last 100 years. You know, 100 years ago, Emmeline Pankhurst started the suffragette movement in London, claimed the right to vote. This spread all over the world. We move forward to the 70s. Women claimed their right to participate in many kinds of work that had traditionally been reserved for men. And now in the early part of the 21st century, there are all kinds of courses emerging at universities talking about feminine ecology, feminine leadership, feminine politics. So it's very obvious in the last 100 years that women have been through a kind of an emancipation, but actually so have men. And the emancipation of men is not quite so obvious, but there is a new masculinity emerging, which is not about men becoming feminized. It's about men actually finding a balance in themselves where they're not restricted into any kind of stereotyping at all.
How would you define a conscious man?
A conscious man is one who is no longer running on automation, right? He's no longer running on his biological inheritance or his social conditioning. A conscious man is one who is aware of all the forces that drive his expression of masculinity, but he's turned that masculinity into a kind of an art form. So he's living as a gift. He's living as conscious art instead of unconscious automation.
So you're writing the book with John Gray, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, who's a friend of yours. What sparked both of you to write this particular book?
Well, it's a great story. You know, he and I are in a men's group together. And We've been in the men's group for years. We've been doing that. And he lives in Marin County, where the men's group takes place. But I live about 2.5 hours away in Nevada City, so it's quite a drive for me to go down. So one time I was feeling a little tired, and I wrote an email to everybody in the group saying, "Could somebody put me up for the night? Because I'd rather not drive home." And John wrote back and said, "Sure, you can stay with me." So, you know, I was a little bit excited because John's such a guy, done so much. He's like, "Oh, I'm going to stay with John Gray." So I went to John Gray's house, and then we went to the men's group. And afterwards, we went back and we sat in his kitchen. And Bonnie, his wife, went to bed. And John and I just sat in the kitchen. First, we started talking about the men's group. And then we started talking more about men in general. And we looked at the clock, and it was 2:30. You know, we've been talking for 4.5 hours. So we thought, oh, my God, we better go to bed. And the next morning I left. But the following month I was also feeling a bit tired. So I just emailed him again and said, "Hey, is it okay if I stay with you again?" And he said, "Yeah, sure, come on by." So I stayed with John Gray a second time. And the same thing happened, that we stayed up really late in the night talking about what it means to be a man. And the third time I said, "Hey, this time let's record it." He said, "Okay." So we started a recorder going. And then, you know, pretty quickly I said to him, you know, this is a book. I mean, we've got so many aspects of this we've talked about. This could be a book. He said, great, let's do it. So basically from there forward, we just met. It was very relaxed. It took us 2 years. I would just go down and stay with him when we both felt in the mood, and we'd go for walks with his dog, and we'd sit in his office, and we'd just chat. It was extremely relaxed. We'd just chat, sometimes all day. We'd just chat about, with a recorder, we just chatted about what we experienced our own masculinity to be, but also, of course, we both worked with thousands, I mean, probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, so we have a lot of experience of working with others. And the result of those conversations, they all got transcribed, and then we just took the, we organized the material into a coherent form, and that's how the book emerged, from really, from two men just enjoying a friendship together.
Did you learn anything new in the writing of this book?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing I learned, Sandy, was the way that the creative process and friendship weaves so closely together between men. I think women have a much greater capacity to be friends just because they're friends. And women do empathize with each other, and they just love to hang out and talk about how they feel. But men really bond and find fulfillment in bonding through creating something together. The men, you know, they build houses together, they used to go to war together, I guess they still do. But men have ways of accomplishing a mission together. So I think John and I discovered that by creating this book, it also allowed us to create a friendship in the same process.
It's interesting because, I mean, you talked about you and John first having conversations like this, which led to the book. But from what I've heard of a lot of men, it's not usual for them to talk about their relationships with one another.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, that's actually a topic we have in the book about why do women have a much easier time getting close to each other than men do. It's a very interesting topic, and actually it's particularly true in the United States of America. It's not really such an issue in Europe, and it's hardly an issue at all in, for example, in India, you know. Now, I'll tell you a funny story. I went camping with a friend of mine in the Trinity Alps, north of San Francisco. And we took all our camping gear. But when we got to the Trinity Alps and we got to the trailhead, it was pouring with rain. So we thought, well, we're not, you know, complete masochists. Let's just go and find a motel. So we went into the nearby town. I think it was called Westport, as I remember. I can't remember the name of the town. We went into the nearby, to Weaverville. So we went into Weaverville to look for a hotel. And the only hotel we could find, motel actually, had one room left. And the one room had one queen-size bed. So we kind of looked at each other a little bit, you know, startled. And then we said, well, what the hell, you know, we need somewhere to sleep. Just do it. So we booked this hotel room with one bed. And the woman started to relate to us as if we were a gay couple. You know, she just assumed, okay, these guys are sharing a bed, they must be a gay couple. And after a few minutes, I corrected the misunderstanding and said, actually, we're not. We're straight guys, we've both got wives, but we just need to sleep somewhere, so we're going to share this bed. And she then said, wow, you know, she said, I'm so impressed with that. That's so incredible that you can do that. She said, in my 35 years, of running this motel, I've seen plenty of women share a bed together, but I can't remember ever seeing men share a bed together. And we kind of pondered about that, and we realized, you know, that for whatever reason, there is a tremendous homophobia, particularly in this country. Even men who have never had a, you know, who are completely straight in their sexuality, they are somehow terrified of being gay. And it's a strange thing, you know. It's a strange sort of. I mean, obviously, we've seen the rights for gay men and the respect for gay men increasing a lot, but still, men who are not gay have this kind of fear, and I think that fear, that unconscious fear, it really does get in the way of men getting closer to each other and enjoying friendship and even a kind of love. You know, there's a kind of love that develops between men that's different from the erotic love between women or the familial love between family members. It's the love of deep friendship. It's agape, they say in Greek.
I think you're absolutely right, and I want to come back to that after the break, Arjuna, because I think that's an important part of it. Mm. You're listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge, and I'm talking with awakening coach, speaker and author Arjuna Ada about his forthcoming book, Conscious Men. After the break, we're going to continue this conversation about homophobia, and also Arjuna's going to tell us about the two important myths that keep us trapped in teenage fantasies and keep us separated from what we really long for. We'll be back in a few moments.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Celebrate!
Are you ready to do something completely amazing for yourself? Spend a weekend with some of the world's most renowned and powerful spiritual teachers. Nourish your soul, enrich your life, honor your spirit, and celebrate you at a Celebrate Your Life conference. Attend powerful, life-changing workshops that will bring you more love, healing, and transformation than you can possibly imagine. Register now. Visit www.celebrateyourlife.org. That's www.celebrateyourlife.org. You cannot separate who you are and what you do from how you interact with the world. Marketing was never meant to be slick and soulless. If you're looking to build your personal or business profile and platform and connect with the audience that resonates with you and your message, visit www.sandysedgebeer.com and discover what 30-plus years of applying the science of resonance in international publishing, marketing, and conscious business development can do.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm Sandy Sedgebeer, and I'm speaking with awakening coach, speaker, and author Arjuna Arda about his new book, Conscious Men. Arjuna, you mentioned at the beginning of the show about the suffragette movement and women had transitions, and I think men went through a kind of reverse transition because over the last century they kind of lost all of the traditional rites of passage that helped men know that they're men, that they've, crossed that threshold. And I know that you cover this in the book. Say a little bit more about it.
Yeah, well, one of the key elements in a rite of passage in Indigenous people was the element of endurance. A boy was not expected to endure pain, either physical or emotional. And so still today, children, if they get an owie, they cry. Nobody in their right mind asks a small child to kind of, take a deep breath and bear it. But I think that's one of the big differences from as a boy becomes a man, is he learns endurance. And he learns that by enduring something painful, actually he develops a kind of pleasure, a kind of bliss of staying present. And actually that causes him to be able to stay in the midst of difficult things. Now that's true, of course, physically. There were rites of passage among the Native American people of performing acts of physical endurance, of painful physical endurance, to be able to become hardened, to become ready for the world. But I think today it's much more true about emotion, that a boy becomes a man when he learns how to be able to feel feelings and not to act them out. So there are many beautiful rites of passage now that you can find. I think one of the great rites of passage for maybe somebody in their late teens, a boy in his late teens, would be the Hoffman process, which is all about. You can find that online, Hoffman process, and that's one particular process that guides a young man into learning how to be present with pain without then inflicting pain on other people.
Now you talk in the book about that there are a couple of myths that actually keep men from real intimacy. What are they?
Yeah. Right. I hope I can remember. Well, one of the myths that we're aware of is the myth of the soulmate. You know, the idea that there is this perfect person out there somewhere for you, and if you could just find this perfect person, you would then, you know, you'd just be happy. And the mythology, of course, is that that love should just be something you feel that happens to you. Whereas what we emphasize in the book, a lot of the book actually, is about learning that love is not something you just something you feel. It's something you practice. It's something you get good at. And particularly, a man can get good at loving a woman and loving his children in a way that's not just a subjective feeling he has, but it's an experience of being loved that the other person has. So we advocate in the book that the best measurement of how loving you are as a man is not how you feel, but how other people feel around you. So that's one of the important myths, you know. I'm not quite sure what you're referring to. I think you're talking about a blog post that I wrote, maybe rather than something in the book. But the other myth that I refer to in this blog post is the idea that you must first learn to love yourself before you can learn to love somebody else. And I don't know if we can go into that in so much depth now, but I think that is a common myth, that we need to develop self-love before you can love somebody else. And I've just personally not seen that work out very well. I think, you know, the trying to cultivate self-love can easily become narcissism, whereas loving other people actually makes you a loving person. When you strive to love other people, you become a loving person, and when you become a loving person, you feel intrinsically good about yourself.
Well, that's an interesting point of view that really hasn't been covered. So, yeah, thank you for putting it back.
Were those the myths you were thinking about, or was it something else?
I think they were, yes, and I think I
did
get it from one of the articles, yes. So you also focus in the book on the 12 most important qualities that you and John see as characteristic of conscious masculinity. I don't want you to reveal all 12, but I think the first and perhaps the most important aspect of being a conscious man, this is something that I think women really need to hear. So tell us about that.
Do you want the first one? Yeah, the first
yes,
quality.
The first one.
The first quality that we identify is that a conscious man has a sense of mission and purpose. In other words, he knows that he's here on the planet to perform a particular role, which usually and often involves giving to other people. So a conscious man, he experiences pleasure and he experiences relaxation and entertainment, but he's not primarily here for those things. He's primarily here to give his gifts. And the example we give in the book is John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, who's built Whole Foods, you know, to a now a $17 billion a year business. But I think you probably know by now how much he earns. You know, the total combination of what John Mackey earns in salary, stock options, and bonuses. Do you know what that sum is? The combination of his salary, stock options, and bonuses. In other words, all the money he gets from Whole Foods. You know what it is?
No.
Zip. Absolutely zip. He doesn't take one penny out of the business. And he does that. Of course, he could. I mean, it's $17 billion a year, but he doesn't take money out because he says that stewarding this business and influencing America to eat in a more conscious way is a reward in itself. He doesn't have to be paid for it. That is a man driven by mission and purpose. He's not primarily rewarded by what he can get for himself. He's primarily rewarded by what he can give to others. And for the record, I'm the same way. I'm the founder of the Awakening Coaching Institute. And I take no money out of that business. If we have extra money, we put it back into Awakening Coaching to make the trainings better. I don't get paid for 80% of what I do. I have private clients who provide me with some income. But I do that, again, I think a lot of men are choosing this to not get paid for their mission because it makes it really clear to themselves and to the world that it is their mission, that they're not doing it for any self-serving interest.
Do you think it's true to say that because men need a sense of purpose, and I think women do too, but often they'll find it in, you know, in having children and raising children, but that men will turn their job, even if it's not something that pays so much that they can afford not to take any salary, do you think that they, you know, turn their job into their mission?
Well, yes. I mean, we would hope that for most men, their way of making money is their mission. I mean, I'm lucky like that everything I do, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, is my mission. But not everybody's so lucky. some people need help or coaching to be able to have that. Yeah, but it's absolutely desirable that's the case. And let me just pick up on what you said for a minute, because, you know, with this book, we're not trying to reinforce gender stereotypes. You know, of course, there are lots and lots and lots of women. I mean, there are countless women who have a tremendously strong sense of mission and purpose. So, I'm sorry, my mind's going blank a minute. Remind me, Jane Goodall, for example. I mean, nobody could say that Jane Goodall, you know, is lacking sense of mission and purpose, or Barbara Marx Hubbard. We could list tons of women who have a sense of mission and purpose, but here's the difference, and it's not 100% difference. It's just something good to be aware of. But in general, and this is a broad generalization, in general, men, well, let's start the other way. In general, women have a sense of mission and purpose, and they also have a sense of radiance and beauty and love. Now, in general, now again, I'm saying it's a gross generalization, I know, but in general, women are more sensitive about beauty and radiance and love. So if you tell a woman, if you were to say to a woman, oh, you look terrible in that dress, she's going to die a small death. It's going to be a mortification for her. But on the other hand, if you say to a woman of any age, if you say, gosh, you look absolutely stunningly beautiful tonight, she's going to flush a little. Even if she's the CEO of the largest corporation in the world, she's going to actually flush a little bit, because the feminine energy, which is alive in both men and women, the feminine energy is more identified with beauty. Now, for a man, of course, you also, you know, a man can dress up. But if you tell a man, dude, you look terrible in that T-shirt, he's just going to laugh, you know. Or if you say to him, hey, you know, great shirt, where'd you get it? He'll kind of shrug and go, I don't know, Kmart, I think. You know, he's not going to get euphoric over complimenting him on his T-shirt, but, or his shirt or whatever. But if you say to a man that his sense of mission and accomplishment is a waste of time, he will feel insulted. So men and women both have mission and purpose. They both have their appearance, but women have more core identity with appearance, and men have core identity with mission. And that's only useful to the extent that it helps you to be sensitive to where people get offended. You know, we're not trying to stereotype here or put people in the pigeonholes. We just want to help people to be aware, particularly to help women to be aware, what are the things that are important to a man? Where is he going to get offended and shut down? And where is he going to be able to blossom? Men tend to thrive much more on a sense of accomplishment, of getting a job done, of checking off a box on a checklist. That's what makes a man feel good. So in the book, we have sections in every chapter for women of how a woman can bring out the best in a man. And we remind a woman, if you can ask a man to do something for you that he's able to accomplish, he's going to feel like $1 million. And if you want to help a man to feel good and to feel motivated to love you more and to show up for you and for more to be present and confident, that's useful information for women to have, because it's different for men and women.
You're so right. And before we close the show, just tell me, what has been the reaction? I know you've been releasing some articles on your website that are little excerpts from the book. What has been the reaction from women and men?
Well, you know, Sandy, the thing is, in writing this book, we have basically chosen voluntarily to step into the hornet's nest, because the truth is that as soon as you talk about gender, it's a really hot topic. You know, a lot of women are very aware that they have fought very hard to have greater freedom. And so any kind of reevaluation of this topic is going to be disturbing to women who are identified with their freedom. It's going to be disturbing to men who, you know, basically everybody has a lot of buttons to get pushed around this. But the reason we wrote the book is, I think, you know, John and I are both, how can I say, I don't want to sound too arrogant, but we're both very, very fulfilled. You know, we have really fantastic marriages that are really just dripping with, you know, ecstasy on all sides. And we have we're very fulfilled in our work. We recognize that when we get around other men, often we can be of help. You know, we can point people in the right direction. And indeed, as you probably know, John has pointed a lot of women in a more helpful direction. So, you know, for whoever wants to benefit from that, we're here. You know, and I know some people will get offended because some of what we're saying is challenging is challenging the reaction that we had. You know, in the 50s, we had a reaction against the stereotypical roles that came before. We had a reaction to it, and now we may have gone a little overboard in some ways. And so in challenging that, I know that some people will get upset, but what to do? You know, this book is what we feel is the most help we can be to people who want help from us, and maybe some people do and some people don't.
Well, I think it's a book that needs to have been written, and it's time a cat was set amongst the pigeons, because we need controversy to have the dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally.
Arjuna,
totally.
Thank you so much for giving us this sneak preview of the book. Now, you said earlier to me that it's going to be published next month, and you're going to bring John Gray back onto the show with you next month.
Well, let's plan for it. Absolutely, yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, that'll be the first Tuesday of October. Arjuna Ardha, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. And if you want to go to Arjuna Ardha's website, which is arjunaardagh.com, you can actually find at /women-letter an excerpt from the book, For Women, About Men. And you'll probably find some other excerpts there too if you dig around. That brings us to the end of this show. For information about future guests on this and other shows I'm involved in, you can sign up for my newsletter at www.sedgebeer.com. The theme tune for this show is from an original song called Searching by Grammy Award-winning producer, composer and musician Barry Goldstein. Sedgebeer, thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to having your company at the same time next week. Till then, don't forget you can listen to more great shows live and in our archives here at vividlife.me.
Thank you for listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge, where scientists, researchers, authors, and teachers working at the leading edge meet. For conversations that aim to shift your perceptions about who you are, why you're here, and what you can achieve when you open your mind, expand your awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. Join us next week, same time, with your host, Sandy Sedgebeer, for another Conversation at the Cutting Edge.
Celebrate!
Are you ready to do something completely amazing for yourself? Spend a weekend with some of the world's most renowned and powerful spiritual teachers.
Celebrate.
Nourish your soul, enrich your life, honor your spirit, and celebrate you at a Celebrate Your Life conference. Attend powerful, life-changing workshops that will bring you more love, healing, and transformation than you can possibly imagine. Register now. Visit www.celebrateyourlife.org. That's www.celebrateyourlife.org.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.